Senate Finance and Claims will come to order. Si, would you take the roll, please?
Vice Chair Glenn?
Here.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Here.
Senator Solomon?
Here.
Senator McGilvery?
Here.
Senator Boldman?
Excused.
Senator Bartel?
Here.
Senator Mandeville?
Here.
Senator Morgeau?
Here.
Senator Lenz?
Here.
Senator Lang?
Excused.
Senator Lynch?
Excused.
Senator Bogner?
Here.
Senator Cuff?
I didn't take mine.
Here.
Senator Flowers?
Here.
Senator Fuller?
Here.
Senator Vance?
Here.
Senator Pope?
Here.
Senator Wellborn?
Here.
Chairman Esp?
Here. Thank you, Si. We have a quorum. If you're here to testify, be sure to turn off your phones and sign in the back. We're going to start this morning with House Bill 883. Chair Jones, we'll open the hearing on House Bill 883.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I figured I better check the phone. It got me the other day. So with that, my name is Lou Jones, House District 18. I bring for your consideration House Bill 883. House Bill 883 is the fire fund. So what does 883 do? It fills the fire fund. 2.6%. We spoke about percentages yesterday, but if you assume each percent equals 30 million, it says the fire fund will go to 6 times 30, 180 million. It transfers insufficient money to take it there from what's in the fund now. The worst fire year we had was 2021. We spent $70 million. Obviously, if you had two of them in a row, 2 times 70, assuming no inflation, 2 times 70 is 140 million. So that is one of the reasons the fund is at that level. It also authorizes the use of the fund for our up to 1% of it for mitigation and the similar amount for preparedness. It's the source of the funding is continues to be if the governor's emergency fund, the 16 that we talked about is 20 million last time, is not utilized for other emergencies. That flows into the fund during the transfer dates in the second fiscal year if it's not been consumed. It also proposes that this fund auto refill each time frame after August 15th of the second fiscal year to the extent that there's money in the general fund to do so. It defines money in the general fund to do so as an amount that it would be able to transfer an amount to the fire fund to take the fire fund back to full if indeed the doing so would not put the general fund at risk, i.e. would not put us in the risk of a potential emergency. Our base funding level we've considered for the general fund is 8.3%. So it effectively says if you can make the transfer and not go below 8.3%, do so. So that's the basic details of the fund. It begins to declare the fire fund. When we first started, when we were first doing work up here, the fire fund served as a savings account and a fire fund. As you are aware, we now have savings account, capital development accounts, and a fire fund. This begins to treat the fire fund more as about directly related to fire. And just because I was fascinated by it, since we have both fire preparedness and possibilities in the bill and fire mitigation, I did you a quick handout. You should have that. What has been happening in fires across this country, and I actually sit on the vice chair of a group also participating is the vice chair of finance that talks about these items, and with the chair of finance out of Washington, and what they have found is their federal fleet used to have, the federal government used to have about 50 large air attack, the big planes, not the little planes, but the big air tankers that fight fires. They used to have about 50 of them. They now have 18. And so what's happening, these 18 are stretched so thin they can't get on fires very quickly. So you're seeing a lot of states remodel about keeping, and this isn't little air. Little air isn't what works as well as big air, are remodeling and looking at potentially keeping such an asset, not necessarily purchasing, but leasing, or finding a way to keep a big air asset or two in the state. If that asset were to be used on the fire, obviously we're about 70-30 federal. Usually the federal government picks up a lot of the tab. Also, if that asset, if we happen to have the wettest year on record, which is rarely ever, that asset is often the other states lease out the assets. But the rule would be if that asset were leased out, say it was fighting fire in Canada and Montana lit up, it would have to finish the pass it's on, refuel, and return. But anyway, what's the neat part about this study? It's amazing, and in looking at, and this is a George Mason University, there's several of them out there, they've been looking at the time on fire, time to get to a fire. And if you can have a large tanker, imagine one past, parked potentially in Kalispell, one potentially parked on the eastern side, if you can get a large air asset on a fire in under 1 hour, it's usually out in 3 hours. If you get it on a fire in 4 to 12 hours, they rarely last more 2.5 days. And you can read, you can see the increase. After 4 days, 48 hours, the fires are so big that even with large air on them, it's difficult to get them out. But they found that if you can dispatch quickly, actually have a plane on hand, get it on a fire almost immediately, and we're not talking a little plane, we're talking a big plane, they put those fires out rapidly. In particular, in today's world where we rarely can put folks in harm's way, you know, we used to have smoke jumpers, you dropped in close, etc. That's just not a thing today. And we've also found that the smaller air assets are indeed valuable, but there's nothing that beats a big tanker dropping 1,500, 1,600 gallons of swath, you know, the thing that runs down the river, refills in 9 seconds. They're amazing planes. And so this doesn't say we're doing that, but under as a potential suppression activity, obviously the DNRC was going to have to choose, but it would authorize such a possibility were that to be where the DNRC went. Anyway, 883 is the fire bill. With that, I'll sit down.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents. Welcome, Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ryan Evans, that's EVANS, I'm the Assistant Budget Director in the Governor's Budget Office. Stand here as a proponent for 883, House Bill 883, on behalf of the administration, the executive. I'd like to thank the sponsor today, Representative Lou Jones. We fully support the changes proposed in this bill, the structure of the fire funds, lots of common sense things going on here. You might remember we did have a significant transfer into the fire fund as part of our November 15th budget, too, as part of the sustainability bill that you heard yesterday. Representative Jones approached us with some additional ideas, and we're in full support of that now, and this is representative of our support here for the or proposal for the fire fund as well. As the representative said, common sense puts money forward. For expenses that we know we absolutely will have, it as a common sense top-off mechanism in years when the general fund can allow for that. As a state, we talk about being prepared, being sustainable, securitizing our investments. This is a way that we can do that. Fire costs are something that we absolutely incur every single year as the state of Montana. It's just a question of how much. And so if we're interested in securitizing our investment across all other state governments, securitizing the tax code, fire fund is a good place to start. Just so you know how we used to fight fires, we didn't have a fire fund. We would go and we had a $32 million or $16 million appropriation for emergencies, and we would effectively spend it out of the general fund balance. And more times than not, that would result in special sessions where we would come back and either make budget cuts or raise taxes to do that. Around 2011, 2013, this was a very important step in the fiscal sustainability of the state, being able to siphon off and put dedicated funds on an ongoing basis towards the fire fund. So, in our opinion, these are the next common steps in those efforts to be sustainable, to securitize rest of the investments around state government, and we would urge your support in this bill. And, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, there's also an HJ2 hearing talking about revenue estimates downstairs. I'd like to go attend and watch and well. If there are questions, I'm happy to come back up and answer those. But with your permission, if I may leave.
That'd be fine. If we have questions, we'll find you somewhere.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Further proponents? Welcome, Director.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Amanda Kaster, K-A-S-T-E-R, and I'm the Director of the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation here today in support of House Bill 883. I want to thank the bill sponsor, Representative Jones, for the bill. And I additionally want to thank Governor Gianforte for his dedication to investing in forest management and initial attack preparedness and reducing wildfire risk to Montana communities. This historic investment reflects the dedication and commitment of the governor, who has long been a leader in this space. DNRC Forestry and Trust Lands Division is responsible for providing wildland fire protection on approximately 60 million acres of state, private, and federal lands, and implements forestry programs on all land ownerships across the state. At the direction of the governor, the DNRC continues to set progressively aggressive goals to increase priority acres under management and explore all opportunities to stymie the forest health and wildfire crisis. But we cannot do it alone. I am here in support of the historic opportunity you have in front of you today to ensure financial stability of the general fund and to avoid passing along the future burden of wildfire suppression costs and the forest health crisis to the Montana taxpayer. You probably heard me say this before, but we face an unprecedented forest health and wildfire crisis in the state of Montana and across the West. A historical lack of proactive and appropriate management has led to the situation we find ourselves in today. Overcrowded forests wrought with disease and the ever-increasing threat of catastrophic wildfires. The public interest, accompanying pressure, and on-the-ground need to demonstrate improvement to our forests has never been higher. In Montana, over the past 10 years, wildfires have become more destructive, more expensive to manage, and more difficult to recover from than they have at any other point in Montana history. We see the effects of this crisis in many ways, in our economy, in the everyday lives of Montanans, and in the complete loss of livelihood for farmers, ranchers, and loggers. I want to be clear, though, I'm not here to ruminate on the reality we're familiar with. I'm here to speak about the opportunity that this legislative body has to make a once-in-a-generation investment to our state's future and emphasize that the DNRC is poised to immediately seize the opportunity that is posed in this bill. At the direction of Governor Gianforte, the DNRC has increased the pace and scale of fuel and forest management work to reduce the risk of wildfire to Montana communities, infrastructure, and natural resources. Because of our dedication to collaboratively developing and implementing the Montana Forest Action Plan, we know where this critical work needs to be done, and we've shown we can be successful. But we have more work to do, and we are constrained by the resources we have available. This bill, I just want to flag, was amended in House Appropriations to OTO fire preparedness, the amendment that also OTO'd money that's historically been available for fuels reduction and mitigation. So I would just say that given the success of our fuels and fire management programs, we'd recommend that the OTO clause in Section 7 be removed. This would allow the agency to continue to plan and develop a sustainable program with partners to enhance our services to Montanans long term. To confront our wildfire and forest health crisis, we need our partners to purchase new equipment, try new technology, and understand that Montana is committed as a partner. Enabling these investments into the future allows our partners and applicable industries to respond and invest with certainty to increase their capacity to help us collectively increase capacity. Fire management in Montana means more than just fire suppression. It means fuels management. No matter the sophistication and improvements in wildland fighting, we must increase the pace and scale of forest management. This is not an either-or conversation. Whether investing fire suppression account dollars into fuel reduction projects, the development of additional county co-op firefighting equipment, or additional suppression resources on contract, these actions increase our firefighters' chances of success in initial attack. Stopping fires when they're small minimizes risks to firefighters and the public. It also reduces suppression costs and impacts to the taxpayers of Montana. The activities authorized in this bill will reduce wildfire risk to our communities and increase the response we can launch against new ignitions. Ultimately, the change will make critically needed funds available to increase the pace and scale of forest management to reduce our risk to wildfire and help stop wildfires before they grow too large to suppress. And when wildfires do occur, the state must be prepared to respond aggressively and must pay its bills for suppression activities. Those expenses are paid out of the state fire suppression account, as you've heard today. However, if there are not sufficient funds within the account, the state must appropriate funds from other legislatively mandated and funded programs to the detriment of taxpayers that rely on those programs and services. If we do not take this opportunity to future-proof the state fire suppression account, we increasingly run the risk of destabilizing the state general fund. Over the past 15 years, the account funds have been adequate in covering the increasing costs of fire suppression efforts, but the margin for error continues to shrink. To provide financial protection, we must make an investment now to guard against future risk. The investment and modernization opportunity to the fire suppression account positions the state to ensure fire suppression expenditures do not adversely affect our ability to balance spending and revenue every budget cycle or impact other accounts across state government. If this bill passes, it will also allow DNRC to significantly increase statewide outputs in active forest management, fuels reduction, and wildfire suppression preparedness. Right now, you are uniquely positioned to ensure the financial stability of the state of Montana continues by adequately funding the fire suppression account to meet the modern-day forest health and wildfire risks that the state of Montana and your communities face. With that, I appreciate your time. I'm available for questions. And if I may, Mr. Chair, I would like to hand out a copy of Montana's Forest Action Plan that gives you a really good sense of the overall need for forest management across the state of Montana.
You may go ahead. Further proponents. Further proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Noah Marion, last name spelled M-A-R-I-O-N, here representing Wild Montana. Our organization, we're one of the participants in the development of the Montana Forest Action Plan, and just want to thank the department for their collaborative work in bringing a bunch of diverse stakeholders together to develop that plan. Also want to thank the Representative Jones for bringing this bill here today. A particular interest to us in the bill is that a portion of these funds can be used for this forest restoration and forest management work that can certainly improve wildlife habitat and reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires, especially close to communities where folks live. And so for those reasons, we'd encourage your support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marion. Further proponents in the room, let's just line up so we can get through this as quickly as we can. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited. For the number of reasons that you heard from Mr. Marion, we also stand in support of the bill today. I want to thank the department and the sponsor for bringing it, as well as the governor's office. I think this is a smart investment and responsible fiscal management. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. For the proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Keenan, K-E-E-N-A-N, and I'm the water plant superintendent for the city and county of Butte Silver Bow. I'm here today to highlight some of the technical and financial assistance the city and county of Butte Silver Bow has received from DNRC's Forestry and Trust Lands Division and speak briefly in support of House Bill 883. DNRC Forestry and Trust Lands Division has assisted Butte Silver Bow and the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest in gaining regional and national support for critical fuels reduction projects within the Basin Creek watershed, which is a vital component of Butte's municipal drinking water supply. DNRC Forestry has also provided foresters and a contractor to work with the Forest Service in designing a project in the watershed that is operationally feasible in this area of limited access and designated inventoried roadless area. DNRC has also provided grant funding and technical assistance for the completion of 34 acres of treatments on county lands in the Basin Creek watershed, and we are currently working with them on projects for an additional 100 acres of treatments on BSB ground in the watershed. We're also looking forward to the Forest Service signing a decision to treat 2,400 acres of federal lands in the watershed beginning this summer. We believe that additional funding from House Bill 883 would be a good investment in treating high-priority acres for fuels reduction in Montana. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'd be available for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Mr. Cowger, are you online? Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Rich Cowger, C-O-W-G-E-R. I have the opportunity to testify again in front of you today. And I today representing the Montana Fire Alliance, which is the Montana State Fire Chiefs Association, the County Fire Wardens Association, the State Volunteers Association, as well as the Montana Fire District Trustees Association. I'm also the fire chief in Columbus. Has been brought out, and we're preaching to the choir with you folks to know that wildfire is becoming a huge issue, not only in our state, as it continues to grow across the nation. In fact, even the U.S. Fire Administrator is on a tour as we speak across the country, talking about the wildfire problem and how it's risen to one of the biggest fire problems the fire service faces across the United States today. House Bill 883 helps the citizens of Montana by financially bolstering the Fire Suppression Fund, which is unique to the state of Montana, and you folks should be proud of that. I get the opportunity to travel to many other states, and many other states are in that situation where they still have to borrow from other funds during fire, severe fire years. And we've taken a proactive approach by building this fund and continuing to strengthen it so that we don't have to do that in the state of Montana, and that's to be commended very much so. This bill also helps in the prevention or the planning preparedness side of things. As Ben's already brought out with the mitigation efforts, we're buying a huge power curve on what healthy forests look like. And so with this extra funding to help get boots on the ground to create those mitigation efforts around our communities as they continue to grow is a big thing. In addition to the education to our property owners and fire planning, and intelligence and so forth to help be more proactive rather than just sinking all of our expense into fire response and initial attack. The other unique thing about our relationship with DNRC in this state is its partnership with local government. In many parts of the state, as you folks well know, DNRC relies on local government to be its initial attack arm, especially in the eastern part of the state. With this increased funding, that gives the DNRC the ability to help organize these departments better, train them, equip them in such a way that it's a beneficial response, a quick response that helps keep major fires off the landscape, which we know in the end is much more expensive with lost tax revenue, the impact to local communities. And so all around this bill, is a win-win situation for everybody across the state. So with that, we encourage, all due respect, we encourage due pass on House Bill 883. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further proponents, opponents, seeing none, informational.
All right, couldn't get up fast enough. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Julia Altemus. That's A-L-T-E-M-U-S. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Wood Products Association. And in the uncomfortable position of the last 10 sessions I've been here, I've never had to oppose a bill that had anything to do with forestry or forest management. But unfortunately, we do have to offer a soft opposition to this because of the one time only for the fire preparedness and the fire fuels mitigation part of it. We do want to thank the sponsor because he's put a lot of effort into this. It is a really good bill, but because of that, it just doesn't offer any consistency or any kind of sustainability in what we do. So one of the main issues that we have, you know, we've lost 34 mills in 33 years, and what we really need supply, and we need consistent supply. So with a one-time only, everything will stop. As you guys revisit this in 2025, that does not give us consistency. And to the point that we've talked about kind of where the health of the forest is, Forest Action Plan has identified 9 million acres in need of treating, 3.4 in that wildland-urban interface. That's really expensive work that has to be done when we fight fires. And also, just so you know, there is, let's see if I can read my notes here, the average annual growth of all trees 5 inches or in diameter or greater is 877.6 million cubic feet in Montana. The average net mortality due to natural causes, not fire, of that same amount of diameter is 931.6 million cubic feet per acre. That means we're losing the battle. That's the negative 54 million cubic feet that we're losing every single year, and it grows exponentially. So that's why all the fuels mitigation is so important. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting the fire, and they're just going to get bigger. So if you would look at possibly removing that one time only, we would remove our soft opposition. We would support the bill. Thank you.
So let's try further opponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peggy Trenk, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association and our timber members, and also the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, in their interest in forest management and in habitat improvement. It is one of those odd situations. I've always been taught that if you'd like to ask for a change in the bill, you stand up as an opponent. So that's the reason we're here in soft opposition, as has been referenced early, to ask for the committee to consider removing the one-time-only language in the bill. Otherwise, it is a great bill. The funding structure is great. We thank the sponsor for his work on this. We think it's very important. But if the bill is amended to remove the OTO, we would certainly be more enthusiastic supporters. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Trenk. Further opponents? Seeing none, informational witness. Seeing none, questions from the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
All right, Chairman. Senator Wellborn first.
I've got one for Ryan Evans first and then one for the sponsor, Mr. Chairman.
We'd have to reel Ryan back in. I let him go.
Okay, I guess two questions for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wellborn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jones, first of all, I guess, what is the thought process? I mean, I think there's a lot of good components to this bill, but the good neighbor authority, the forest management piece of it has always been done in Section C, and it's always been a wildly successful program. And I guess my question is, has there been any discussion around maybe risking what is a very good program in search of what you feel is a perfect program, and how are we going to have some certainty that forestry work is going to continue to be done with this money moving around? I mean, what certainty do we have that we're not going to be spending money in the wrong place and not getting the work done where we always have before?
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator, if I remember right, the mitigation, the amount that you spoke to was $5 million, if I'm correct, on the initial deal. This does not, we're speaking about the OTO portion, right? If you notice, this bill requests 6%, then 6%, then 6%. It does not get rid of the percentages. What happens is there's a significant increase proposed. The 1% for the mitigation, 1% for the potential for suppression. Now, that doesn't mean it'll all be spent in that, but it's appropriated, so it's authorized. So the thought process was, given that 1% is closer to $30 million, and we were spending $5 million, the OTO wasn't a suggestion that it shouldn't continue. The OTO was a suggestion that with a six-fold increase, potentially, there needed to be a report back of what was done and was it effective. And so thus, the OTOs were put on, not in any manner to suggest it was an OTO process, but along the lines of report in. And on the preparedness or suppression, that's at this direct level of investment at this is new, and I realize it's expensive, right? I did the research on this, or I would never have supported these numbers. A big scooper is about $6 million a year parked. You put two, and so 2 years is 12. You park two scoopers, you're spending $24 million. Now, what the other states are showing is you're really not spending $24 million because when it flies, it's paid for in whatever percentage is federal or state. And if it's a wet year, it usually goes to other states and actually has an increased day rate, so it actually earns money. So the net cost is not likely to be that high. But as a legislature, we were taking a program that historically had been able to consume $5 million, suggesting that in that if we put those two blocks together, 1% could be spent, $60 million. I think this is a wise investment. I think we need to do this. I choke on the smoke. And when you look at all the research, the houses burned down, the forests, the tourism, the business, we need to do this. But it was hard to convince folks that we should change the level of aggressive in the funding here and not have a way to report back. And as you're well aware, since you've done this as well, is proposing some portion be OTO merely suggests that they have to come back and defend it was a good idea. But if you're asking, do I believe it's OTO? No, I do not. And it might be as simple as saying you get your old funding level guaranteed and the new stuff is OTO. I'm not going to die on the sword if this is ongoing, but I do think there needs to be some report mechanism to suggest if we are switching how we address fires, and I believe the administration is doing good things here, that we're aggressively mitigating at this level, and we're suggesting getting on fires faster, quicker, with an enhanced cost asset. I guess I'd like to see the books when we got done and make sure that it paid. I think that was an outstanding program at $5 million. I think it'll be better served at a higher number. But I just want a report.
Follow up. And I get that. I mean, and I agree on all of your points on fighting fires and getting on them aggressively and stuff like that. I guess my fear is we've got the good neighbor authority is, you know, the forest work that's being done is good. I mean, I'm comfortable them reporting the way they've been doing it in Section C. We, you know, I think that there's a lot of transparency on that. And I'm not disagreeing with this concept. I guess I am on the forestry piece of this. I guess the OTO has given me a little heartburn. I would rather see maybe it become statutorily on that piece and the rest of it, you know, however, but you get my point. I mean, I think we're maybe
I've
taken a risk on the perfect error and risking the good in the process is my fear. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, I always interesting to try a new idea.
So, Senator, if all of it would be ongoing with some report mechanism, I would not cry alligator tears. If half of it were to be ongoing with some report mechanism, I would not cry alligator tears. The argument I would have only is that we probably need to ensure with this level of proposed investment change that we look at it and make sure that I think this is the right thing to do. Work from other state indicates it's the absolute right thing to do. It saves structures. It saves total cost. But I'd like to know it, not think it,
if
that makes sense.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not going to I agree with Senator Wellborn, and I have concern about the OTO. My question is, what percent or amount is reserved for fire suppression? Is there – I'm trying to find the breakouts, and I wasn't finding it, and I don't
– So if you – if so that we – as we spoke yesterday, 1% is about $30 million. We always use percentages because it ties it to the general fund. Actually, the vice chair is going to clarify what 1% is in 424. But if you assume 1% is $30 million, you're going to be closer than you're off. If you read the bill, which I don't think I brought up here, somewhere near the back of the bill, it'll reference. It was interesting that they wanted the one written as 1%. So it says, lines 21 through 26, you'll see on line 23, 1% of all general fund appropriations in the second year of the biennium is statutorily appropriated for the purpose of, and so that talks about that. And then on the next page, instead of saying 1%, it said 0.5% a year. 0.5 plus 0.5 is 1%. So you see the one for suppression, one for preparedness. It does authorize, I guess I shouldn't say, 1%. And in truth, the 1% is a biennial appropriation, so it can be spent in either year. But this simply lays it out. There's 1% for preparedness, 1% for mitigation, which is your the challenge, the program you brought up, the Good Neighbor Authority, that I think is well done. And so it simply lays them out as percentages, for the reason that when you put something into statute and the general fund changes constantly, and with this rate of inflation, maybe it'll be $40 million, you know, $4 billion, it'll be $5 billion. I remember when I got here, it was half of what it is now, less than that. These numbers change when you do it as percentages. Things keep up and align.
One follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up
with some references that you made in your opening. Were you proposing to buy large, that the state buy large fire bombers, such as those that we lease from Neptune Aviation at Missoula?
Mr. Chairman, no, I was not proposing the state buy anything. I proposed to authorize the DNRC to look at large suppression efforts. I actually am not much of a buy those large assets person. My suggestion, and again, I'm now a party of one. When I look at what other states have done, they lease these assets for 4 months or something, and so they get priority use, so they don't have to maintain them, they don't have to train the pilots. They simply park a couple of these large assets who are required to stay in the state unless authorized to leave by our DNRC. And again, when these leased assets fly, they bill 70, 30 federal, whatever they're fighting, they bill. So that changes the state cost. And were it to be a year where we obviously weren't at fire threat, what other states have done with these assets is they've simply released them with the obligation to come back quickly, right? Because that's what the lease did. So they'll be fighting fire. They're a fast-moving plane, right? So they could be fighting fire in Canada. And if we actually lit on fire, a lot of the leases say you complete the pass, you're on, land the plane, field the plane, and fly back to whatever state leases you. But I don't propose to be the fire expert. That's why we have the DNRC. The models I've been just looking at, and you can look at the George Mason study, or there's several out now, that are most effective are actually putting a couple large aggressive assets on the ground close, simply because the federal government, we just can't, 50 planes went to 18 and they don't arrive in time. And the fires burn 4 days and then we can't get it out.
Senator Flowers.
Follow up.
Oh.
I have one. Could I have
one more,
a question?
One more.
Director Castor.
All right.
For Director Castor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cuff.
Thank you, Director Castor. Mr. Chairman, in 2013, I helped set up the original fire suppression fund, emergency fund, and I'm a strong believer that you save a lot more money by prevention efforts and proper management than you do when it gets to the fact of fighting a fire. I don't care, some of them, how many bombers you hit it with, they grow. But the question is, are you confident that using this money in the way it's been proposed, are you confident we have enough in the fire suppression fund to take care of the firefighting, which we started out with, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cuff, I do feel confident. I mean, as I noted in my testimony, we have seen that fire activity continues to change and fire becomes more expensive, but you also, I think many of you are familiar with how DNRC fights fire, and we are required to do initial attack. So we're going to be keeping these fires as small as possible, which is proven to be, you know, the best for Montana taxpayers. And then I think with this opportunity for additional money for fuels mitigation and fuel reduction work, we're, you know, the governor and I are incredibly committed to doing as much work as we can to really make a dent in this space. You heard me talk previously in front of this committee about our goals that we've set to treat more acres. With this opportunity being presented in front of us, we're going to be incredibly vigilant in making sure we're doing more work.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Flowers, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my surrogate here has already asked the question, okay. So thank you.
Senator McGillivray.
Director Castor.
Director.
Mr. Chair, Senator McGillivray.
Thank you. Okay. Looking at the bill, I know we have fuel reduction and mitigation as a part of the strategy. and you know this, I have concern that because we're losing the infrastructure in eastern Montana, that doesn't matter how much fuel mitigation you go in and do. If you don't have any place to take your product, those small diameter pine or the big ponderosa that's twisted or the juniper, I mean, there's not much market for it. So I can chop all the trees down you want, and you can burn it all in a slash pile. That doesn't make much economic sense. So what is the strategy to use some of this money for the infrastructure that can process the product?
Mr. Chair, Senator McGilvery, what I'd like to do is I'll start this, and then if I can, I'd like to redirect to Sean Thomas, who's our division administrator, and he's been having some conversations in this space with folks, including Department of Commerce. And then I don't know if Julia Altimus with Montana Wood would also like to provide her perspective from industry. But you heard Julia mention a sustainable supply. And I think that is really a key component of this discussion that we as the state are looking to be able to provide to industry. With that, I'll redirect to Sean. Sean, do you want to cover Sean will cover the commerce discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, if you'd introduce yourself, please.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Thomas. That's Sean, spelled with a W, Thomas. I'm the Division Administrator for the Forestry and Trustlands Division for DNRC. Mr. Chairman, Senator McGilvery, I just would quickly echo what Director Castor had to say. We feel like if we can provide a long-term sustainable supply of wood fiber, the private sector will fill in the gaps on the infrastructure investment. So I know it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg problem in eastern Montana right now, but there are some things already happening, and we feel like if we can make these investments and get these treatments done, it'll increase that supply on a sustainable long-term basis, and the private sector will fill in the gaps, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So can you articulate some of the things that are already happening? Can you describe some of that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGilvery, you're aware there's a gentleman out of Laurel who's working on some wood products conversion stuff related to ponderosa pine. You know, those are the types of individuals. People are making some investments on a smaller scale, and they're doing some work. There are some programs. The federal government has some programs for wood innovations grants that run through DNRC. We can help facilitate and assist folks in applying for the money to do these types of investments. The Department of Commerce might have options for businesses to invest in this space. So there are things that are happening, and we're working on trying to get the supply up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Lenz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll follow Senator McGilvery's question with wood products lobbyist, please.
Ms. Altimus.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lenz. Good morning.
Good morning. So I thought he was on the right track there a little bit in that on some level, is this a little bit of a pipe dream that we're going to be doing significant mitigation when the infrastructure for our processing our wood products has been severely reduced over the years?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair, Senator Lenz. So let me back up just a little bit. So back in 2009, because of the ERA dollars that came into the state, we were able to get three funds together and created the Revolving Loan Fund for Distressed Timber Industry that was existing at that time, which has honestly been a great tool. It's been a great fund. It is a loan. It's a low-interest loan that's paid back. And then once they pay it back, they have a couple years. And if they need to borrow again, they can borrow again. We cobbled together a little bit over $13 million. That fund is still there for the distressed timber industry. Fast forward, though, we want to keep that there as it is because industry is always the first one into a bad economic situation, and we're the last ones out. It took us over 10 years to get out of that situation back in 2008. With the current fire suppression account, that $5 million that is available when it hits a certain level, when the DNRC goes out for proposals, there's usually about $14 million worth of requests come in, so they can never actually fully fund all those requests. So there's definitely a need to get the work done. As far as the industry goes, the current industry, even though we've lost RY Timber, we've lost Townsend and RY were the last two, the industry that we have currently is certainly available to take up that slack. We do believe that RY may have a buyer. I hope that that is the case by the end of the year. There's been about six companies that have been proposing or sniffing around or making offers. So I do think that that one may come back online. I'm really hopeful that it will. But when you get farther east into the state, ponderosa pine is one of those species that some of the mills will take and some of them won't. So you have to find a market for them. But I do agree with Mr. Thomas that if the money is there and the supply is there, I got some really smart people in this state, and they'll figure it out. The market will come. The market will come. And if there's an opportunity to use some of that, let's say there's $30 million, and you can use $15 for fuels mitigation and $15 for I wouldn't say a grant program, but for maybe another revolving loan fund program, add more money to what's already there, I think you'll use it. I think you will find people that will take advantage of that opportunity. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably a question for Ms. Castor, Director Castor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair, Director Castor, I appreciate the broad authority in this bill for preventative work, essentially. What's confusing to me is how do you balance all that broad authority and where all the money can be invested with emergency suppression needs. So in any given year, you don't know what a fire season's going to result in. And given that it can be $70 million, we've demonstrated that once. If you don't hold back $70 million to deal with emergency fire suppression, and you've instead allocated that to preventative work that's allowed under this bill, then what happens? I mean, how do you balance that emergency reserve, so to speak, for direct fire suppression versus all the preventative work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, I'm trying to take a look at the bill here to see kind of the mechanism, because I don't think that can actually happen as I read it. Maybe, Chair Jones, am I incorrect in my read on that? Well, sorry, if I can redirect just on the mechanics.
Can you redirect to the sponsor?
Senator,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Jones.
Senator, if you talk about the funding mechanism, I'm always comfortable with that. 4% times 31 is $124 million, right? So it reserves $124 million immediately for fighting fire, and then it also picks up whatever's left of the governor's emergency fund, which if they spent nothing out of the 20 would be another 20. That's $144 million of possibilities. You'd have to have two $70 million fires in a row. The second part is the timing matters. You pay your fire bills, so you'd have the first fire season and the money would end up going out, which normally goes out late in the fall or even into the winter of that season. Well, the second fire season, were we to say somehow have a $70 then an $80 million fire and we were short, it is almost an impossible scenario that we wouldn't be back in town to help the season. And that would be to assume that the automated transfer, because remember the bill has an automatic transfer, so unless the general funds in an emergency in the second year of the biennium after August 15th, the general fund simply refills it. So it's going to be very, very difficult for it if you're just talking firefighting, not aggressive suppression or mitigation, it will be able to fight a fire. It's going to take a drastic change in the size of fires, and it's going to require that they occur. You'd have to have a massive, massive fire season that exceeded $120 million or $100 million plus in the first season that got beyond the fund's ability to refill itself. And so the mechanisms and the timing in the bill will let folks fight fire, and on the suppression and mitigation, they're not authorized to access the 4%. It's reserved for fire, if that makes sense, sir.
Mr. Chair, it does. Thank you.
Senator Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions have been raised, and I'd like to help answer those. But mills need a long-term outlook, and I'd like to have Montana Wood Products Director Julia Altimus.
Ms. Altimus.
Fire suppression, fire prevention is paramount in protecting the most a very important part of mill operation, mill management, and that's by having a timber supply. I have shut mills down because of lack of timber supply. We do a lot of things that help. Good neighbor authority. This fund is big. Private landowners, Director Altimus, there's another segment here that Sean Thomas mentioned, counting on private landowners to supply a balance. And there's another piece of legislation coming through our system. Would you want to mention that other segment that we impact land management through taxation policy? Do you want to address that?
Sure. Thank you, Senator Cuffin. And Mr. Chair, and I apologize for walking up late. Senator Wellborn was capturing my attention. So, yes, Senate Bill 3, which last session everybody heard the fact that there was an issue with taxation on private forest timberlands, not only the non-industrial but the industrial private timberlands, and that was Senate Bill 262 and 263, I believe. And so you guys did a temporary fix last session. So this session was Senate Bill 3. We're doing a more permanent fix to help because what happened, the Bureau of Economic Research and University of Montana had done they do the calculation as far as what the stumpage value is. So when the forest landowners got their stumpage or got their taxes back in 2021, I guess it was 2020, it had gone up 86% in one zone and 104% in one zone and 60% in another zone. That causes real concern of timberland owners who own, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres of timberland and aren't going to harvest or make any money for 70 or 80 years. And so we did recalculation through the interim advisory committee that worked on it. And then this permanent fix is to move it from a six-year taxation to 2-year. It's a 10% or 10-year Olympic average. So you throw out the bottom and the top, and you've got the 8 years in between. The Department of Revenue is certainly in support, and it's moving through the system, but I'm not going to probably remember the exact amount, Senator Cuff, of what that tax is going to be, but it's neutral neutral for the first biennium, and then it goes up.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Well, let's get, because that's quite, I realize it's related, but we're quite far from this.
Other folks brought this up, and you cannot run a mayor without long-term. Just quick, does taxation impact long-term management? Does it stay timberland if people, just quick, yes or no?
No, they'll make a different decision if taxes go up, yeah.
Thank you. Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for maybe the sponsor, maybe you have to move it on.
Representative Jones.
Representative, so in the bill, I'm just curious. So you say that this bill will help fuel reduction and mitigation and forest restoration. I assume, and maybe you can correct me, but because I'm not in Section C, but I assume that this was already being done at different levels. So is the funding that's in this bill, is it in addition to the funding that would maybe be in the DNRC, or was the funding for fuel reduction, mitigation, forest restoration removed from House Bill 2 and DNRC and then is put into 883? Could you kind of talk about that, please?
Mr. Chairman, and I believe Senator Wellborn touched upon that. This, obviously, the DNRC exists in that section. So all of this will eventually go through DNRC. What this does is the good neighbor, the money proposed before for mitigation was substantially lower than this. The executive came in with an increased proposal. This simply changed it to percentages for mitigation. This also proposes a much more aggressive, and again, it doesn't force it to happen. It says up to. And again, so I go back to why that was one time only. Not the amount in the account. The account would refill anyway. The use in the account was proposed as one time only. And again, that could certainly be cleaned up because we wanted to make sure that the questions Representative McGilvery asked, the questions that Senator Lenz asked of if you start aggressively looking to mitigate at this level, what are you doing and is there a return? I assume there will be, but I don't know that, and I just wanted some report mechanism. It, again, would have to come through Section C, but you'd want to make sure you looked at it, right? Because the cost of fire is high, and it's not always captured in the cost of what the state sees. So you're hoping that by the state being more aggressive here, the citizens of the state, whether it's health or property or tourism or business, benefit from this. We've seen the destruction to structures. It also proposes that we get more aggressive on suppression, and there's a couple very recent studies out on that. The George Mason one I gave you a couple pages out, but you can certainly look it up. There's two or three, and to be blunt, they are very clear. They simply show that, and I have friends that fly the air tractors, the small planes. I have friends that fly the helicopters. But the truth is that if you want fires to go out quick, you have to get larger air than that on it quicker. And so I'm hoping they take serious what other states and studies are showing, that you need some sort of a large air asset to get on a fire, likely if they're parked in-state within an hour, certainly within 4 hours, and have the results you achieve. Will it cost more to do that? Without a doubt. How much more? Don't know, because they get paid for when they fly. They get paid for by other states if you lease them out. Thus the thought that some of this should be more clear in its reporting. Obviously, you could simply say, be more clear in your reporting, too. But that was the intent of the bill. But no, the fire bill, when it left last time, would have been closer to 4%, maybe 4.5%. Again, the general fund changes size. This is 6%. This proposes increased mitigation and increased, I guess they call it preparedness. I always call it suppression, but whatever that term might be. And so it is more aggressive in it. It is not what the executive proposed. If you remember when the initial executive proposal was 12%, but at that point they were still using it as a savings account. I don't see the fire fund as a savings account. I see it as a fire fund.
Thank you. Seeing no follow-up.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Director Castor, and maybe she can move to somebody else.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bartel.
Good morning. So in this bill, it also talks about forest management projects on federal land. Can you explain a little bit of my thinking is we're using state money on federal land. Do we do that all the time, or is this new, or just give me a little update, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bartel, I'd be happy to. And you heard Senator Wellborn mention the Good Neighbor Authority Program. So that's one of those authorities that Congress codified back during the mid-2010s in the Farm Bill. And that allows states to essentially go in and treat federal acres. And why that's important is when you look at the Forest Action Plan in front of you and those 9 million high-risk acres, look at the makeup of where those acres fall. They're primarily on federal land. And so we believe that in order to really get at the heart of the forest health crisis, we have to really take an all-hands approach. It just can't be state lands, just can't be private lands. Federal lands are in the mix, too. And with this authority that Congress has given, we have been able to be really successful in collaboratively working with our federal partners, and not just Forest Service, it also includes the BLM. And in that way, we really can help to treat more acres. And that's, the direction that the governor has given us, that we need to be doing more work, and the feds need support there. So We believe, given our track record, we're successful, we can get the work done.
Seeing no further questions, Representative, would you like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe most what could be asked was asked. First special session I ever came to was a fire session. I believe we needed to put $50 million into the fire then. There wasn't a fund. It was in the time frame. Since I'm old, it was in the time frame before there was a fund. And so I do recognize that fires can catch you off guard if you're not prepared. This is a well-structured fund. It will refill if there's capability to do so. It associates fire money with fires. It proposes more aggressive mitigation and suppression activities. As to the OTO portion, I'll leave that to your judgment. My only request would be that if we are going to suggest this level of increased suppression and mitigation is ongoing, that we ensure we take a look at it and make sure that whether we're in eastern Montana with pines that we don't know where they're going to go, or we're in the Good Neighbor Authority section, that we make sure that this enhanced spend is actually doing what we would hope it do and keep some smoke out of the skies and protect some structures. With that, I close.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 883. We'll go ahead and open the hearing on 868. Oh, sorry, no, 588. I would remind members we got six bills left. If we don't pick up the pace here, we're going to be here past the floor session. So remind you that this one here has had a policy committee hearing, so we're just talking about the dollars that came across the floor last night. Representative Jones, if you'd like to open on 588.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lou Jones, House District 18. I bring for your consideration House Bill 588, which revises the TEACH Act. You've heard the policy portion of it. Basically, the TEACH Act was a bill that passed last time. The purpose of the bill was to incentivize compression of the salary scales, negotiations potentially between the unions and school boards. It has been effectively doing so. What happened is there was a hole in the TEACH Act so that the Class 5 provisional licenses, the A, B, and C license, were not included. And so as a result, especially the rural schools that are trying to hire these provisional licenses, and the provisionals are, just so you be clear, they're on track to be licensed, the Class A, they haven't taken the praxis exam. So it's 1 year out, or they're 3 year licenses, your teacher's license has expired, so you've got to get some continuing credits, or you're converting from a professional degree to a license on a program. What has occurred is the Class 5 provisionals, which are utilized at a high level, were not included. This includes them. It also, a lot of the schools have to do an emergency authorization, which is authorize a person that is not a teacher to come in for a year. The TEACH Act, as originally written, was a little punitive to that. It excluded that person. For example, in my area, we had a person with a music degree that came in, taught for a year, then ultimately decided to become a music teacher, and that year of teaching was held against them. This corrects that error and continues to do the work of the TEACH Act, which has addressed the beginning teacher pay in Montana fairly successfully so far, and this will enhance its ability to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. The proponents for this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association. My last name is spelled M-E-L-T-O-N. I'm also here on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. I believe your staff has that reference to the organizations that are members there. Don't have an annotated fiscal note for you today. I just want to emphasize our support for the bill and also help you understand that the districts that are using Class 5 provisionals who are treated better under this this bill, and emergency authorizations are predominantly the districts who have the most difficult time recruiting and retaining staff in the state of Montana, largely smaller districts who will be benefited as a result of the appropriation in this bill, and it will give them good assistance in making headway on being able to recruit new staff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. For the proponents? Seeing none, Katya, do we have anybody online for this bill?
Mr. Chair, there is nobody online to testify on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. How about opponents? Any opponents? Informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. I work for the Office of Public Instruction and may be able to help with this fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly do. That was substantially shorter and easier than the previous one. So with that, I'll leave you to your list of bills.
This closes the hearing on House Bill 588.
Let's open the hearing on House Bill 864. If the sponsors here, Representative Moore in the room, Representative Jones, your co-sponsor, you want to, it's just a transfer bill, if you're willing to do it. I think it's the companion bill. Open the hearing on House Bill 864, Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lou Jones. I bring for your consideration House Bill 864. 864 is one of the companion bills. Representative Moore is its sponsor. Basically, at the point we transferred this companion bill, we did not know if there would be additional companion work done in that section, and so this bill came to you as a somewhat empty vessel. It had to have an appropriation in it to cross the floor, and so the transfer in that was to ensure that the bill could get to you in case this committee, in its work on House Bill 2, arrived at a need to do more work in this bill. So with that, so the transfer in it is de minimis, and I won't even speak to that because I'd have to look up what accounts they were, but it was not intentionally there to do anything other than allow the bill to come to you to do good works with the bill if need be. So with that, I'll sit down and wait again.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents of the bill. Proponents. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Fitzpatrick, House District 77. I'm here to offer a proposed amendment to the bill. We've had several discussions in appropriations and in finance and claims about the issues at Montana State Prison and the need to make some very substantial capital investments. One of the biggest problems that we have with the state construction process is that it's very inefficient and it's very, very slow. And the amendment that I offer for your consideration is one that allows the governor to make an emergency declaration and to suspend some of the provisions in Chapter 18, which regulates the practice of basically architectural and engineering services for the state, and also to suspend the requirement that a Montana-licensed architect or engineer do the work. The reason I'm bringing this to you is that other states have recently built prisons. They have designs for prison systems and cell blocks. And I think it makes some sense for the state of Montana, perhaps, to instead of trying to always reinvent the wheel, that we maybe look at purchasing a set of plans from outside the state and expeditiously moving on these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further proponents of the bill? Further proponents? Seeing Kachi, is there anyone online for this?
Mr. Chair, there is nobody online to testify on this bill either. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Opponents? Opponents? Informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Vice Chair Ellis.
We got two amendments passed out on this bill, and I don't know if I should ask the amendment sponsor or the carrier. Oh, don't ask. Ask the carrier. Do you know what this does? I just wanted to explain to me.
Well, Senator Fitzpatrick just did.
No, I understand. He did his. There's two amendments.
The other one is Senator Lynch's.
And he was surprised by
it. Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. It's the same amendment.
Oh.
Well,
one's on surviving spouses.
No.
Joe, staff can explain it, maybe.
Joe, please.
Mr. Chairman, okay, the First Amendment that is all in white and red, it doesn't have a shaded box, was the one that Representative Fitzpatrick handed out. The second one was requested quite a while back. When you recall, we had a bill in here about the Columbia Falls Cemetery, for the Veterans Cemetery, and what this particularly does is it allows, in the companion bill, it allows that particular appropriation in House Bill 2 to be funded through the cigarette tax. So it had to have this language put in it to be able to allow that to be a valid state special revenue appropriation in House Bill 2.
Thank you.
All righty. Further questions? Senator Bartel.
Mr. Chair, a question for Representative Fitzpatrick.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you explained what this amendment will do, but you didn't touch on, I didn't hear it, on new section 2, line 14 through 16. Why is that in there? What's it pertain to? The construction of a prison, and you mentioned that you'd just be getting around A&E because there may be other states that have a better design or design that's already A&E'd, so, and that we could possibly use it, but I didn't hear anything about the new Section 2.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bartel, Section 2 of the first line part indicates that when the state-owned prison census exceeds 90% of its design capacity, the governor has the opportunity, if he chooses, to declare a housing emergency, which will trigger the action in subsection 2, and that is to relieve some of the requirements in the A&E process. He can suspend them and say that we can look for other alternatives. Right now at Montana State Prison, they're probably at 25 or 30% over design capacity, and they've got a serious problem that needs to be addressed. The problem with the state building process is that the state per se can't design buildings. It has to go out and hire architects and engineers, of which there are a very limited number in Montana that do, you know, basically big commercial construction. There's nobody in Montana that does prison construction per se. And so what ends up happening with every A&E project is everything is custom designed. And that takes a long time. Then you go through the bid process, and then you get into construction. We're talking about replacing the low-side units and taking 4 years to get it done. Well, all I'm suggesting here is if the governor has an additional tool, perhaps he can accelerate that process, and maybe we could get it done in 2.5 or 3 years. Because we've got a very difficult situation at the prison, and if we don't act on things perhaps more expeditiously than we normally do, we could have some serious trouble. And these sections of code, they basically relate to the process of architects in Montana have to stamp the drawings. I discussed this issue with Mr. Catherman in Section F. I said, well, how about if we go to Utah has recently built a prison and go down and buy their plans? Okay, they're done by a certified architect and engineer. Well, he tells me then we have to bring the plans back to Montana. We have to hire a Montana architect and engineer to flip through the pages and put their stamp on it. And we'll, of course, pay rather substantially for that. That seems to be both very inefficient and a very poor use of state's money. And so all I'm trying to do here is give the governor a little more opportunity to get things done quicker, more efficiently, and perhaps less costly.
Follow up?
Follow up.
Representative, so my concern is what else would that new section allow the governor in the case that you're, if this, what this says?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bartel, it's
in other areas besides construction.
It's specifically listed to state-owned prisons. We have three of them. We have Montana State Prison, the Women's Prison in Billings, and Pine Hill School. It won't affect anything else.
Follow up?
No, thank you.
Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzpatrick, how did you come up with the 90% number? Is that some kind of industry standard for when prisons are exceeding capacity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mandeville, no, I picked it out of the air. Okay. I could have used 95 or 85. 90 seemed reasonable.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzpatrick, if it's an emergency to me, tends to mean that we're over capacity. And you said the state hospital is probably 20-25% or so over design capacity. I mean, why wouldn't we make this 100%, 110% so we make sure that an actual emergency exists instead of we're just close to an emergency?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, you can pick that number anywhere you want. But I can tell you this about Montana State Prison. Units A through C were designed for 96 inmates. They're currently at around 200. Mm-hmm. So if you were to sit down and look at the capacity of the prison, they do have a couple. They have one unit that's completely shut down because the locking mechanism doesn't work, but they're probably well over 100% of the original capacity. So as far as I'm concerned, you can put any number in there that you want. All I'm looking for is to give the governor a tool that he can use if he thinks that it's justified.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Lynch.
Representative Fitzpatrick, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzpatrick, I appreciate the creativity. And I do see, you know, on page one, line 26, where you talk about expedite construction of additional inmate capacity within the prison. And then I guess I was looking at the second page where it talks about you buying the plans. And I wanted to validate or make sure that it was to buy the plans as well as construct a state-owned facility. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lynch, that's correct. The idea here is, you know, other states are building prisons. They can go out and if they find a plan that's desirable, I mean, A&E must, you know, consult with corrections. And then if they find a plan that they like, then they have the ability to move forward and build it. And then they have the option to hire a local or a state engineer and consulting engineer to oversee the project if the original people didn't do the job.
Thank you. And then a question for the sponsor.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I close on the bill and hope to make the note.
I didn't ask you to close. We have a question for you, so.
Darn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, $500 million, I guess that number, you know, in the original bill that by August 15th of 2023, the state treasurer will transfer $500, I guess I missed the whole number. Will there be an amendment forthcoming that gets us to the right number?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe it was $500, and so I'm happy it wasn't $500 million, which was why I was going to go look for the bill.
I was just trying to see if I get your blood pressure going this morning.
Yes. And you did, because if it was $500 million, I'm opposed to the bill. But at $500 in there, I appreciate this committee's ability to research exactly what that $500 is doing and to determine if it is necessary at that amount or potentially not needed at all.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Care to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hopefully am able to leave now and because I don't recognize the next bill. So thank you.
Thanks for pinch hitting. This closes the hearing on it. House Bill 864. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 868, I guess. Representative Schillinger, you're up. You may open on your bill, House Bill 868, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Jerry Schillinger, House District 37. That's S-C-H-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. Members of the committee, actually, House Bill 868 is a companion as well to Section C, and there's really nothing in it other than, if you'd like me to proceed, I've got a couple amendments here this morning as well I could do.
We are getting the amendments passed out at this moment. Both years are to me.
What's that?
I have both your amendments. I think most of us do. So if you want to talk about them, that'd be
okay,
fine.
Okay, great. Okay, what I would, at the request of another member, I've got a couple, basically they're just reporting amendments, Mr. Chair, and HB 0868.001.003 is in regards to fish, wildlife, and parks, and it just is stipulating that the department should report to the interim committee project on or progress on long-term projects that have been going on for multiple years here that still have large amounts of money sitting in them unspent, and we're just requesting an update on the progress of them or if there is going to be any progress. So just basically a reporting request, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is that all you have for your open?
That's it.
All right. We'll go to proponents. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Fitzpatrick, House District 77. The amendment that Representative Schillinger brought you is one that basically emerged out of a series of discussions about the long-range building projects, both in Section F and also in the Appropriations Committee. And what we noticed in Section F is that the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has unspent appropriations reaching back as far as 2015. Projects seem to be stalled. For example, with Habitat Montana, they've got appropriations going back to 2017. Current balance in the account is $18.7 million. $7.5 million is completely unallocated. Future Fisheries goes back to 2017, $1.8 million in the current balance, $700,000 completely unallocated. Upland Game in Bird Enhancement Program, projects that go back to 2015, $2.5 million in the current balance. The hope here is to ask the department to provide the legislature with an update of their progress on these projects. Now, of course, projects can be stalled for any number of reasons, but it would be useful, I think, for the legislature to understand why monies that were appropriated several years ago have still not been completed, and I support the amendment and the hope of this committee will adopt the amendment and put it into the House Bill 868. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents. Okay. Any opponents? Opponents in the room? Seeing none, informational witnesses.
Mr. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amy Steinmetz, last name spelled S-T-E-I-N-M-E-T-Z. I'm the Waste Management and Remediation Division Administrator at DEQ, and I'm just here to answer any questions that you might have on the posted amendment.
Thank you. Further information of witnesses? Seeing none, I will just say that I have an amendment in the packet. The one I'll move is 004, and that's probably what Ms. Steinmetz is here to talk about if there are any questions. Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the presentation from Representative Schillinger on his companion bill, there are just a couple of comments that I would like to address the committee. One of them is that I see that maybe Representative Schillinger is a little more conservative than maybe the Section A fellow, because it's only $100 instead of $500. Just a point of interest to folks.
And 20%.
The other one is a little more seriousness, but I've been promoting and to look at these state specials that the other representative brought forward is why with this amendment is why we need to look at these state specials, and I would hope that that maybe we would be able to look at all state specials in each of the sections, and we have a vehicle in which we could look at these state specials and see whether they're being funded or whether they're not being used, any inactivity or activity, in that we would look at all the state special accounts through the IBC process that we have already in place that we will meet on a quarterly basis. So I would just like to make that point, that get everybody thinking about that's something that we could do, because as what was indicated by the representative, there is millions of dollars that are sitting out there that have not have in accounts that have not had any activity for a number of years, in or out, just no activity at all. And I think that that's something that the IABCs could help the citizens of Montana and actually try to use this money that's sitting there that's not being used. Thank you.
So, I was so confused there. Further questions? Seeing none, I'll just ask Ms. Steinmetz a quick question. Ms. Steinmetz, so you've looked over the amendment that I had prepared, 004, is that something that's workable for you?
Mr. Chair, it is.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Representative, you care to close?
Yes, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd just like to acknowledge, I appreciate Senator Bartel's encouragement on our austerity in this budget. And I'd also note that, and now I see she left, Senator Ellis was actually expressed some dismay that we were substantially coming in under the previous amendment. So just acknowledge both of those. But with that, I'd like to just close and encourage you to support the amendment. Thank you.
This closes the hearing on that bill. I brought one once that had $50 in it, just so you know.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment that you're talking about, what is it again?
004.
868.001.004.
Yep. Just stick that in your folder with your bill.
It was not in mine. Here it is.
All righty. We're going to move on to House Bill 332, and this is a re-referral off the floor, so we're going to roll through it as quickly as we can. Representative Beattie, you may open on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman Esp and members of the committee. For the record, I am David Beattie, representative of House District 86, which comprises Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. As Chairman indicated, this was heard on the floor yesterday, so I'll get out of the polish. Just remind you, or remind you, this has to do with the creation of a statewide school health trust. Here are the key fiscal aspects of the bill. Number one, the bill appropriates $45 million on an OTO basis to establish the initial operating reserve of a qualifying trust. If the trust is not approved by the state auditor by June 30th, 2026, the funds will revert. Those funds will revert to the state. Any districts entering a trust may not bring their current liabilities into the trust. In other words, the trust's assets may not be used to pay off liabilities, pre-existing liabilities that any entering district might have. If the trust accumulates reserves in excess, those deemed actuarially necessary in any given year, those excess funds will be remitted to the state until such time that the state's $45 million investment has been returned. And if the trust is dissolved, trust reserve balances will be remitted to the state. And finally, as you'll see throughout the bill, the state auditor has been assigned the task of overseeing this trust from its inception and throughout its operations, thus protecting the state's investment. I close on my opening, Chairman Esp.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents for the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association, also up here again on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. Mr. Chairman, do you mind if I hand out an annotated fiscal note?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would just first tell you that I'm glad to answer any questions that you may have on the substance of the bill or the fiscal note. I want to give you some context for some of the numbers that you'll see in here. So on the first page where you see that $45 million amount, to put that in the context of what we're talking about here, is the state plan at about $1,054 per month applied to all school employees would be a $290 million annual premium. We don't currently have that. And you'll see in the fiscal note on the second page that current expenditures by school districts are at about half of that amount. So contributing about $6,400 per employee rather than, you know, $12,600 or so for what happens in state government, comparable contributions in the federal government as well as in local government. But to put this in the context here, that even though that number is rather large and we recognize that, it's about 14% of what the total contributions would be if this trust gets up and running with the number of employees that are out there. A version of this fiscal note at one point, I don't know if this one says it, said that the Office of Public Instruction doesn't know how many school employees there are. And I want you to know that that's true, but they know how many qualified educators there are. So all the certified staff, people who are licensed teachers, administrators, there's 13,700 of them. We know that for sure because you have a formula that generates a payment for each of them, the quality educator payment. We estimate there's another 8 to 10,000 classified staff, food service workers, and so on. But we don't have that for sure. Best guess that I can give you, we have a self-funded work comp program that we've operated since 1989. It provides coverage to 20,000 employees in Montana. We don't have all of the school districts in it, but we have most of them. So we know it's north of 20,000. We have a self-funded unemployment insurance program that we've run since 1994. It actually shows 26,000 employees, but that includes everybody who even got paid one time for taking tickets at a football game, not people that are working 20 hours or more per week. That's why we come up with this estimate, which we believe to be reasonable, that we're talking of about 23,000 employees who regularly work 20 hours or more a week. Down at the bottom of page one, you'll see my highlight there. It has to have at least 150 school districts. There are 405 school districts out there. Among those school districts, we have 75 school districts that have fewer than 20 kids and maybe one or two staff, just to give you some context for how you get up to 405 school districts. It's really 300 school systems. You've got 16 school districts tied up in eight AA school districts, for example. Eight school systems, AA school systems. But just to give you, again, some context there. On the second page, wanted to make sure that you were aware of notes number 4 and 5, where each year after this trust is up and running, the trust would have to provide a notice to all of its members regarding what the rates are for them, how that compares to medical care inflation, and a calculation of an inflation gap factor. That if it's charging more than 1.5 times medical care inflation, the school district has the right to leave. The other rule is you have to stay for at least 5 years unless this factor is met, in which case you can leave at any time. You pay your tab on the way out the door. That ensures against unfair or uncompetitive rating. The bill was amended down from $1,000. The concept was $1,000 per employee for an incentive to come in. So originally the fiscal note had $20 million for an incentive and $40 million for a trust reserve. That $1,000 was really intended to be about 10% of an annual premium or 2 years of inflation at 5%. It was to smooth out the rough edges during transition. That did get cut back. It's now down to about $440 if you had minimum participation at 12,000 employees, or down to $250 if you were at, say, 20,000 employees that came into that trust. So fairly meager there. We sacrificed in that regard. We did not want to see a commensurate reduction in that trust balance. That's where the real stability comes in this bill, is that $40 million portion. And to give you some context for the size of that reserve compared to other reserves, you have an interim report between the 17 and 19 sessions that estimated what the reserve should be for your own plan, 12,000 employees approximately covered under the state plan, and another 12,000 covered under the university plan. And to give you an idea how much this can vary, the state plan did not have excess loss coverage at that time. And the actual recommendation was for a reserve balance of $75 million. That's pretty high. Correspondingly, the same group, about the same size, the university plan, which had excess loss coverage, the estimate was $25 million. So this 40 is somewhere right there in the middle, maybe even a little on the small side. But the contents of the bill authorize use of excess loss coverage in consultation with the actuaries. So we think that's probably the way it's going to go. So just to give you very quickly, when they have the identification of that $147 million at the bottom of page 2, and you may note I didn't give you pages 3 and 4 because I didn't have any comments on it, but this $147 million, this all happened in a very unusual way. Up until 1991, school districts funded their health insurance contributions in the same way that local government did so. And in 1991, on a near unanimous bill, House Bill 715, Representative Ray Peck, requested by Superintendent Nancy Keenan, put in the words, "except school districts," in Section 2-9-212. That section says local governments can impose levies without a vote necessary to pay for the health insurance of their staff. So, you know, we all decided, this was on the end of the equity lawsuit, that school districts were going to be taken care of by the solution to the equity lawsuit. And there was actually about a $40 million increase in 1991 in the legislature. That $40 million came back out of the formula in 1993. So I think there were great plans to increase state funding to cover that gap, which is why I presume you have nearly unanimous approval across both parties to restrict school districts from paying the bill the way that they had up until that point. But then the finances for the state didn't follow through, and funding went backwards in 1993. That's enough of the details there. I do have annotations here. I'm glad to answer any detailed questions you may have on any aspect of this bill. Thank you.
Further proponents? Burke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Eric Burke on behalf of the Montana Federation of Public Employees, rising today in support of House Bill 332. Mr. Chairman, you would remember many years ago, we've been working on health insurance in public schools for a very long time in this state, and bills have been brought before this body many, many times, and this bill is a good one. It's an investment in Montana's public schools to address a cost that is a real cost and a very expensive cost for school personnel. Health insurance and medical rates have shot up precipitously for years. It puts pressure on school district budgets. It leads to decisions between can we afford increased salaries or can we, or do we continue to try to fund health insurance plans for our members, for school employees. Those decisions are very difficult. This bill, the fiscal impact is that it will help schools address teacher shortages. It will help schools bring an end to the straight-up curve that they're seeing on health insurance and medical costs. And it will also be good for taxpayers because it will lead to lower costs for providing health insurance in Montana school districts. We would appreciate your support of this good bill. It is an investment. We realize there is a fiscal note attached to it and a fiscal an appropriation, but it's an investment in helping our schools, something that this body has been struggling with for many, many years. We would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. For the proponents, seeing none, is the witness online for this bill? Raise your hand, Mr. Stiles, if you're on this bill. Any opponents? Opponents in the room? Informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Senator Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Milton.
Mr. Milton, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glimm.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Milton, you talked about the other money, not the $40 million, but the what's now $5 million and used to be $20 million, and it looks to me like that's an incentive to get people to sign up into this process. But then a lot of the other talk is that it's such a good deal and everybody's going to want to do it. Why are we paying people to do something they should want to do if that's the, or am I missing something?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glimm, it was really to get over the hump of the fear of the unknown. The status quo bias of, you know, schools are pretty desperate in terms of how they're managing to patch together health insurance. At that $6,400 per employee across the whole state takes a pretty heavy toll. So people are gun shy on this. Honestly, as much as I really believed in the $20 million, because I thought that 2 years of inflation to say, hey, you know, this will tide you over with the inflationary costs, if there are any, while you assimilate and come into this plan was a good idea. I hate to suggest any reduction in funding in here, but we strongly preserved and felt very strongly about that $40 million for long-term stability, and the $5 million brings it down to the point where I'm not sure it will do much good at $250 for 20,000 employees or $414 for the minimum threshold at 12,000. I wouldn't say I would be comfortable letting it go, but I can completely acknowledge that the original concept, which was 2 years of smoothing inflation to get people over the fear of the unknown, probably not going to work out with the $5 million.
Follow up,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Milton. So what you're saying is that there's hesitancy on the part of the people that would be participating.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glimm, I think anytime you have school districts, 400 school systems out there that are going to be invited to collaborate together for their mutual benefit and try to work this out but give up some level of local control, I think that there's hesitancy out there. I think that the districts are going to come together and put this together. I think you had yesterday on the Senate floor the letter that we encouraged and obtained from all of the AA school districts, which I think were the ones that we were most worried about hesitancy, all supporting the concept. And we have 5,000 employee lives in the Must Trust program, which I do participate in helping govern, along with MFPE and School Administrators of Montana.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the question, Senator Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Milton, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fuller.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Milton, would you explain to the committee why you believe that the necessity of the five-year buy-in is required?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fuller, yeah, glad to do so. The adverse selection that goes on, if you have people coming and going, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but we do sometimes call it the dance of the lemmings. You're sitting there going, how am I going to figure this out? I can't amalgamate the $140 million that's missing in the aggregate to pay for health insurance. So I'm going to go wherever I can get the lowest, cheapest rate today, tomorrow, maybe again next Tuesday. So you come in, you work for a couple of years, then you jump out. And what that does for a trust that's self-funded and looking for stability over time is it kind of ravages it. So, you know, we did put in another out here that was recommended during the consideration of the bill by the House Appropriations Committee for assuring that there's not an unfair rating structure, that if you got low experience, the it should follow along with your rates, and that if it doesn't, you get to walk out the door.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. There's a question. Questions all over the place. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Milton, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang.
Mr. Milton, Mr. Chairman, just because of some of the days off and things like that, the sick leave and all that teachers have, how many do you anticipate, will there be substitute teachers that will qualify? And I guess you described qualifying by 20 hours a week. Will it be for this program?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang, they would qualify for participation. There wouldn't necessarily be any guarantee of who pays the bill for that. But there are some long-term subs that work on a regular basis in excess of 20 hours a week that could conceivably qualify.
Could you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mill, could you define a long-term sub to me, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang, a long-term substitute is sort of a term of art that we use based upon the threshold and administrative rule that says that once you go over 30 consecutive days, you got to put that person under a contract. So we have substitute teachers that come without a contract on and off throughout the year. But if you're in there for more than 30 consecutive days, then it's a long-term sub.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I want to make a note. I do appreciate substitutes. Thank you.
Senator Bartel.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Mr. Melton. Just clarification.
You will next session.
Mr. Melton, so your answer on number 14 in the fiscal note, so 23,000 employees, is that, or actually just a health care benefit, is that a true figure of expenditures by the employer, or did that include any contribution or anything else?
Mr. Chairman.
Number? Is that a good number?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bartel, the $147 million is a lock-solid number. That's out of OPI expenditure data. So we know that's the contribution that's being made by the school district. And we have to presume, let's assume all other things being equal, that we're providing the same coverage that the state's providing. Employees are picking up an average of $6,000 on top of that. Now, that's not exactly what happens. It's feast and famine district by district. I just want you to know that in the aggregate, it'd be about 50% from the employer and about 50% from the employee.
Senator McGillray.
Yeah, for Mr. Milton. So going back to the MUST program, why are you not using the MUST and just expanding on that? And will all the people, will MUST just collapse if this plan goes forward?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGillivray, thank you for that question. The MUST Trust, which has been around since about 1983 when we first founded it, is actually doing quite well. It has reserve balances of just under $11 million for 5,000 covered employee lives. The way that the law works, and this is current law, if a trust folds up its tent, the money gets pro rata paid out on a per member basis. It depends on what the terms of the coverage are with the participating districts, but it would not be unusual to get that back out on a per employee basis. If not on a per employee, then a per member, which include family members. That money goes into an internal service fund, and the school district has the ability to use that fund in order to pay health insurance benefits for its staff. So what I foresee for any of these groups that are out there, we had a double-edged sword. You know, originally we just wrote this and said you had to have 12,000 lives. Fiscal note came out, I believe it was wrong, and said the only one that could qualify is Must. Must couldn't qualify. It's short 7,000 lives and nowhere to get them without going and collaborating with anybody, with somebody that had not yet collaborated with them. So we went back in and said this trust has to be created on or after July 1st, 2023. And that's in order to make sure that everybody starts at the same start point. Competition can reign. If that's the joint powers trust that gets to the finish line and is the most innovative group that amalgamates and convinces school districts to collaborate together, they'll probably be the ones that run this. If the former employees of Must are able to make that happen, they may be. A AA school district may be able to put it together. Blue Cross, Allegiance, Pacific Source, all of them are eligible to create this trust under the terms of the bill. The missing piece here is that five-year participation level, which we don't have for the existing members of Must. And so you'd have to have sort of a disproportionate effect. Anybody coming in from now on has to agree to stick for 5 years. The rest of them are on an earlier participation agreement to which they're entitled and can't do that. So dissolution and reformation, also avoiding putting anyone at the with an X factor at the front end of things to be able to claim this, was the intent of doing the changes that we did in the bill.
So going back to the $45 million that starts it, is that truly going to be reserved, or do you feel like that'll subsidize premiums and X number of years in the future we'll have to come back and give another appropriation to keep this thing moving forward?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGilvery, I think it's going to build, and I think we're going to repay it. There's a provision in the bill that Senator Hertz added to the bill, I think is a good provision, that says after it's up and running and stabilized, starting in 2036, there has to be an annual consideration of your reserve balance, and any amount in excess reserves, which are over those necessary to cover the incurred but not reported claims of the trust, will start to be repaid back to the state. I think that's the most likely outcome.
And one more question.
One more?
So do you feel like it's going to be a difficulty to get the 12,000 lives in there? What's your projection?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGilvery, I'm pretty hopeful. The fact that the AA school districts have contributed their support here, you know, it depends on whether people can get together. And there's nobody that gets to tell them. I don't get to tell them. No one gets to tell anybody to do anything in this. It's if they can put it together. But the AA school districts have 9,500 employee lives. Must has 5,000. Joint Powers Trust has 3,000. I think we can get to the 12,000.
Further questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you for either Mr. Melton or the sponsor of the bill. And I appreciate the creativity. I guess a question or a thought process. Was there any conversation about taking a $45 million appropriation and looking at the state health plan and buying that risk off the table for school districts to just join the existing plan that we know is functioning with existing contracts?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynch, there was. We had discussions over the interim, and we've had discussions for many years on this point. But during this last interim, and understandably, the state plan said, we take you, but you got to come in on this plan. We want the employer paying the whole bill, and we could figure this out. And on that basis, because there is such a wide variety, I mean, I'll guarantee you that in that $6,400 average, because I know lots of teachers that are actually getting comparable coverage to what the state, not all of them, but a lot of them, I mean, somebody's getting zero. Somebody's getting goose eggs out there. And so all for one come in and, you know, join the state plan, but you got to all pay the same rate. It's all going to be immediate. That was the only terms upon which the state plan was willing to even entertain the notion.
Mr. Chair, can I refer to Senator Solomon?
You could, or we could do that in executive, but we could do it now, too. Just can you remember it till executive?
But Mr. Chair, my attention span is not
all right.
Not very
Senator good. Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, we did talk to, as we looked around trying to do this bill, we did talk state fund. The problem was $1,054, I think it's the dollars per month that covers everybody, you know, in the state. That's a pretty healthy chunk. That's not double, but it's probably, what, 45% higher premium rate. Now, it has great coverage on the rest of the family. It's like $300 or something. That's one of the issues they had. Plus, they wanted $40 million, by the way, just for the schools to buy in. All so right. We did definitely check that out. It just didn't work.
Great. Seeing no further questions, Representative, care to close on this bill?
Chairman Espin, members of the committee, thank you for a great hearing. I think we did a good job of staying on the fiscal note. This is sound public policy. You know, if we could have redone things in 1991 or been a little bit more careful over the intervening years, we might not find ourselves where we are today, but here we are, and I think that this is a reasonable solution to a problem that is stressing school budgets across the state and affecting and consequently affecting teacher and staff recruitment and retention. Thank you, Chairman S.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 332. We will now open the hearing on House Bill 403. Representative.
And Chairman Espin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Beattie, representative of House District 86, which is comprised of Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. House Bill 403 serves two fiscal purposes. Both of them relate to teacher and specialist license fees. First, it redirects license fee revenue that currently is going to the Board of Public Education, and it redirects that funding from the Board of Public Education to the Office of Public Instruction, where it is to be used exclusively for OPI's teacher and specialist licensure fee program. With respect to the Board of Education, its funding will then be backfilled with general fund dollars so that this small agency will be fully funded by the general fund rather than having half of its budget funded by state special revenue and the other half funded by general fund. Note that the budget is only about $700,000 a year for the agency, so having an unpredictable cash flow related to teacher license fees has always been problematic for that agency. Second, the bill requires that license fees be set at an amount, teacher and specialist license fees be set at an amount sufficient to fund the OPI's licensure activities. This is, by the way, this is consistent with how fees are set for other professions within the state of Montana. In this case, the superintendent of public instruction would recommend what the annual and filing fee amount should be, and ultimately the Board of Public Education is responsible for approving those fees. Once again, this is consistent with how other trades and professions are handled in the state. Now, with teacher and specialist license fees, fees for both annual renewal and initial filings have been set at $6 since 1991. $6 per year, that is to say, since 1991. Based upon figures provided by OPI, and as you can see in the fiscal note, it would be necessary to increase that from $6 a year to $20 a year in order to fully fund OPI's operation. Chairman Esp, that concludes my opening.
Thank you, Representative. Again, we're only speaking to the fiscal impact. We kind of understand the bill is a backup to another bill is a backup to another bill kind of thing. But proponents of the bill. Proponents. Mr. Stiles, are you on this bill? Raise your hand if you are. Any opponents of the bill? Opponents?
Shock and surprise, right? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Amanda Curtis, CURTIS, the president of MFPE, representing 10,000 of Montana's 12,000 or so teachers. And it's rare that you see two bills back to back by the same sponsor where one is so great and one is such a stinker. I will start by commending the OPI on the new licensure system. It has been an improvement, and teachers across Montana are appreciating it. I will just say that the number you see in this fiscal note represents a number that will be coming out of the pockets of Montana's teachers. As you make your decision, I'd ask you to consider the issues that we're having filling our teaching positions and how badly we would all like to keep our teacher candidates in Montana. I know that the sponsor mentioned that this puts teaching in the same position as other boards, but I would pose to you that the legislature does not have a constitutional mandate to fund a free quality public system of plumbing or electricians, but you all do have a constitutional mandate to provide a free quality system of education, and we consider the licensure system to be part of that system. In the House, the Office of Public Instruction was a staunch opponent, and you'll have an informational witness today that in the House gave a list of exorbitant fees that the superintendent predicted would be imposed upon teachers. I'm not sure what happened between the House and the Senate. I doubt that information will be relayed today. If you would like access to that video, I can clip it and send it to you, or maybe in your questions, you'll ask what the superintendent's office actually projects teachers' fees will be. We appreciate your consideration in opposing taking this money out of teachers' pockets. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Further opponents? Opponents? Seeing none, informational witnesses.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jay Phillips, PHI, LLIPS, Chief Financial Officer, Office of Public Instruction, here to address questions around the fiscal note, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. For the sponsor, please.
Chairman S.
It probably says on the fiscal note, but how much would you anticipate the fee for a teacher would be per year?
It's on the fiscal note. I believe it's $20 a year is the estimate.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair, I'll take the bait. Question for Mr. Phillips.
Ms. Chairman, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Phillips, one of the other folks who testified earlier said that OPI was an opponent in the House, and now you're informational. Can you explain why you've changed your position on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, so initially I'd say that the superintendent's been on record multiple times stating that she didn't want to raise teacher fees. So she's been an advocate for the teachers in that regard. As the bill has been carried forward, I think that she chose that the path for us is to provide informational witnesses as best service to the process itself.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thanks, Mr. Phillips. So at this point, is the superintendent still opposed to raising fees for teachers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, as I understand it, yes.
Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Ms. Curtis.
Ms. Curtis.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Curtis. So if I'm understanding this right, and tell me if I'm wrong, but going from a fee of $6 to $20 or so, but there's no cap, so that could go beyond 20 as this bill's written. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mandeville, you are exactly correct. Thank you for raising that. And in the House, the Superintendent of Public Instruction had a projection of exactly how high they actually predicted this to go based on their math.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Curtis, so is this is basically a tax on teachers for the privilege of being a teacher?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mandeville, yes, thank you for that.
Okay, great, Mr. Chair. I'm glad MFPE is against raising taxes.
Further questions? Seeing none, Representative, care to close?
Thank you, Chairman Esp and members of the committee. I do have a few comments in closing here to make. Number one, this bill is not an attack on teachers. That is a nonsense idea. This is a bill that brings the teaching profession in line with other professions in the state of Montana, pure and simple. And anyone who knows me, knows my background, and knows the progression of this bill will understand that I am not attacking teachers, and it's not the purpose of this bill, just to be on the record with that. With respect to the exorbitant fees that were referenced in the House Education Committee meeting, you may go listen to that testimony. You'll find it baffling, I'm sure, because I found it baffling as well. The Education Interim Budget Committee studied teacher license fees in the state of Montana and contiguous states so that we could have a frame of reference. We spent over a year doing that. We also received abundant information from the OPI during the interim, and all that information is consistent with the fees that is suggested in the fiscal note that you see here. Some of the numbers, and I don't have them in my mind exactly right now, but as I listened during the House Education Committee, I was astounded at the numbers that were suggested. I think one of them was $150 a year. I will tell you that this is flat nonsense. It does not cost that OPI that much to run this system. Why the superintendent decided that to provide that information to the House Education Committee, which coincidentally disregarded that testimony, is I will leave to someone else's imagination. But as for this particular bill, this is good public policy. It actually elevates the teaching profession, and I would hope that you support it. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 403. Members of the committee, we have one more, I think, to muddle through here. Representative, you're here. All right, we'll open the hearing on House Bill 382. Representative Oblander.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Oblander, spelled O-B-L-A-N-D-E-R. I represent House District 40, which is Northwest Yellowstone County and all of Musselshell County. So this morning I come before you regarding House Bill 382, and this involves the CTSO, or the Career Technical Student Organizations, that is a program that's been in existence since 2013. And it's been a very successful program, and we're excited to be here today to talk about it in front of you. This bill went through extensive vetting on the House side through appropriations and so forth. We made some amendments to the bill in an attempt to make it not just a good bill, but a great bill. And we feel like we've done that. There are currently seven organizations that are in the CTSO program. And if you have the bill in front of you, it's on page two. This involves two types of funding, which is one of the changes we made in the bill. And one of them is the base funding, which is what each CTSO gets across the state. And the second one is based on performance. We felt it was critical that we have some type of performance metrics that we could measure the success of the program and see where that takes us. And it allows each of the CTSO groups to submit proposals on how they would expend these funds, what they intended to have for goals and achievements, and then a way to measure those so that we can look and see each year how they've done on their programs and their proposals. The base funding is $553,000. That has been in existence since 2013 and is part of House Bill 2. The $500,000 ask that we're requesting currently, that involves expanding the program. We want to take the success of this program that has been so good for the 9 to 12th grade students and be able to add to it and be able to go out into some of the rural areas and those types of things and be able to offer them the same type of program. Each of the seven CTSOs in and of itself is unique, and it provides those opportunities for students to have an experience in some career they might be interested in. I know in my case, as a freshman to 12th grader, I had no idea what I wanted to do, and a program like this would have been phenomenal to be able to be exposed to stuff. If you'll look at the fiscal note, you'll see the $500,000 listed there. And on the assumptions, it talks about the $553,000 House Bill 2. Line 2, it says House Bill 832. That's a typo. It should be 382. So if you're looking at that. The funding is to be line item identified for the CTSO performance, as I stated. And the intent of this is to have those performance grants be evaluated. We didn't want this program to be something that they just got the funding and they went off and did whatever they thought they needed to. And so that's why we initiated and added those performance grants. The ability of the CTSOs, locally, we wanted them to have some skin in the game too, and so they are required to go out into the communities and get $20,000 worth of money from the community, from businesses and individuals who are willing to support the program. Out of that $20,000, only $5,000 of it can be in kind. The other $15,000 has to be a donation of some kind that is cash related. The intent of that is to make the organizations each have to go into their community, talk about their programs, and get the local businesses excited and involved with that. It requires the superintendent to go through those proposals each year and evaluate them, and then they are to report to the Education Interim Committee on the success of the program and what they're finding and seeing. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I will let others speak and be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. First proponent, remember we're talking about the $500,000 and if you think it's a good idea or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Callie Wicks. That's K-A-L-I-W-I-C-K-S. I'm here today on behalf of Montana HOSA, Future Health Professionals, as the vice chair of their advisory board. I first want to thank the sponsor for doing such a wonderful job outlining the fiscal note of the bill. I think he spelled it out very well, so I'll just add a few additional things. I want to make sure that the committee is aware that the additional funding is put forth on very specific metrics, some of which include getting workforce certifications. This is very important for our rural communities when we're looking at EMT licenses. I know we've had a lot of discussion in the legislature about the lack of EMTs in rural Montana, so we feel that this is very helpful for our rural communities. Additionally, CNA certifications, where we have kids that get trained, they're able to get these certifications, and they're able to go to work in their local nursing homes, which really helps our workforce. Of course, there are additional workforce certifications throughout the remainder of the rest of the CTSOs, whether that be OSHA certifications, Safe Server, those types of things, where we're really working to get these kids out into their communities, working and contributing to the economy. So what I would say additionally to the committee is that we know that kids that are in CTSOs become taxpayers. They become working members that contribute to the Montana economy, and they're able to do that quicker than a lot of other kids who are not involved. So we think that this is a great use of funds and a wonderful return on investment. I'm happy to answer any additional questions on the bill and would like to also mention support from the Montana Dental Association, the Montana Economic Developers Association, the Billings Chamber of Commerce, Reach Higher Montana, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, the Montana Hospital Association, University of Providence, and MSU and Great Falls College. So thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, please. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sheridan Johnson. That's S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N. Johnson is a common spelling, here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce, and we thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forth. Two of the four pillars of the Montana Chamber's strategic plan are workforce development and entrepreneurship, and as such, we are strong supporters of career and technical education and their accompanying organizations. Of special note is the Montana Chamber Foundation's Youth Entrepreneurship Empowered and Prospects programming that are implemented by CTE educators and incorporated into CTSO conferences across the state. As the previous proponent mentioned, these folks become taxpayers, and I'm a graduate of Conrad High School and served as the Montana FCCLA president in 2016-17 and the Montana FFA president in 2017-18. I can personally attest to the transformative powers of career and technical student organizations and the opportunities, skills, connections, and experiences they provide. The uniqueness of these organizations means students are learning technical skills in their field, whether it's welding, marketing, culinary arts, while simultaneously learning networking, leadership, interview, and other professional soft skills that are so essential in the workplace. No students are exactly alike, and one student may find success in a four-year degree and beyond, while another might pursue a two-year degree or trade school, or another might directly enter the workforce with the training provided through these organizations. That's what's so essential about supporting the many different career and technical student organizations in this state and providing the funding necessary to create these intercurricular experiences. By tailoring experiences to our students interested in careers in healthcare, agriculture, childcare, hospitality, manufacturing, or business, through these organizations, students are graduating high school with essential workforce skills, whether they are enrolled in higher education or not. They cannot accomplish these goals as an organization without adequate funding, especially as they serve an increasing number of students. We just are strong supporters of this bill and urge it to pass. Thanks.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I'm the executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association, and we, too, support this immensely. We are heavily reliant on competent welders, pipe fitters, boilermakers, process operators, and this bill goes a long ways to help us reach those goals of employing the young people in Montana. I've got a really good example of this. One of my grandsons through FFA has been in numerous welding programs. He's doing welding competitions around the state. And these are the kind of programs that would benefit from this funding, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Reisig, last name spelled R-E-I-S-I-G. I'm the executive director of the Montana Quality Education Coalition. This morning, I speak on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for the Montana Public Schools. We've supported this bill throughout the entire legislative process, and we continue to support the bill, especially the funding mechanisms contained in the fiscal note. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Amanda Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S, here as the president of MFPE, representing roughly 20,000 Montanans, half of whom teach the programs that are listed in the fiscal note, and the other half who very likely have kids in the programs. And we are in support of the money you see in the fiscal note in support of these programs and look forward to working with the sponsor or any of you in adding our own aspiring educators program to the list of CTSOs that you see in the fiscal note so that we can start funneling our high school students into the education profession as a solution to this teacher shortage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Further proponents. Mr. Stiles, are you a proponent?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you all for having me today. My apologies for not being there in person. We are in Orlando, Florida with your DECA students, which is one of your CTSOs, 26,000 kids in Orlando, and we're going to bring home some hardware for you back to Montana. So thank you for allowing via Zoom. On the fiscal note, Mr. Chair, a couple of letters that I'd like to email to the committee for consideration that have been signed by 140 plus alumni signatures, 135 plus chapter advisors, and over 110 industry leaders across the community. If I could send those to your email or to the secretary to have entered to the record, I would appreciate that. When we look at this fiscal note, you know, really what we're looking at is time. And I know as we, you know, discuss in financing claims to the fiscal note, you know, our job is to kind of settle the bar tab on the Titanic, so to speak. And so I think, you know, this money is well spent on these students. And as they advance into college and careers, it's a great opportunity for them to apply their skills and apply that workforce development. It's an important thing to note that this funding was established in 2013 for these seven CTSOs. And since its inception, CTSOs have seen exponential growth over that 10 plus year period. And not only have we seen exponential growth, but we've experienced a pandemic during that time of growth. And we've also experienced large inflation to host and execute our program. So as you guys look at this fiscal note, I ask you to consider, you know, the fact that it is a small ask relative to the students that you're serving, the 11,000 plus students across Montana that you're serving each and every year. And also to mention that this isn't paid in full, that the programs do go out and solicit additional funding, and that these students do come out of pocket a lot to travel and participate in addition to the support received from the state. So it's very, very far and few in between that financing claims or appropriations sees bills and legislation that ask for a small amount of money in comparison to the actual money that's required to execute the program. So I ask you to take that under advisement. And strongly urge a due pass on this legislation. It's money well spent in our workforce. It's money well spent in our next generation. And, you know, with the cost of inflation and without an ask for an increase over the last 10 years, your CTSOs and CTE students have done you proud. And I, you know, would appreciate you all standing behind the House representatives.
Mr. Stiles, you got to wrap it up. You said you strongly supported it 30 seconds ago.
Yep, you bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll close with that. I'll stand if there's any questions.
Thank you. Seeing no further proponents, are there opponents in the room? Opponents? Informational witnesses?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Jay Phillips, PHI, LLIPS, Chief Financial Officer, Office of Public Instruction. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Any other informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Oblender, do you have an estimate of, does this translate, I guess, to more students being touched by this program, serviced by this program, being able to participate in the program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, so the exact numbers I couldn't tell you, but when we saw this in the House, we had over 50 students come in that were part of the program, and there's a lot of interest in this program because a lot of them don't intend to go to four-year colleges, and so they're looking at life skills, if you will, to be able to help them have careers that don't require a four-year college degree. So there is a good interest in this. Does that answer your question?
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Oplander, that helps. But I guess what I'm trying to get at, the purpose of these grants is to expand the reach of the program statewide or to all these CTSOs to service more students and be able to kind of allow more participation in the program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, that's absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative, I have one. The notion in the existing funding is just divided up between the seven groups. Is that what the notion is with this extra $500,000?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The intent of that, of the additional fund, the $553,000 of the initial and that is in House Bill 2, that gets divided up equally, and then the $500,000 is the same way, and that's based upon each CTSO providing a proposal on what they anticipate doing in the next year as far as what their goals and achievements will be, which then gets measured so that we can look back and see the benefit that our dollars are actually having in each of those.
So, Representative, if at the end of the time it gets measured and one group fell way short of expectations, then would we be back to reallocate this money next time?
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. The intent of it is if one of the CTSOs doesn't continue with their program or doesn't do the things that they said they would do, then their money would go and be back into the pot and be divided amongst the other groups.
Ms. Wicks, do you have an opinion on that?
Mr. Chair, on many things. Thank you for calling me to the podium. I just wanted to clarify what the good representative was saying. The way that the bill is set up is that the base amount of funding is distributed equally for operational expenses. That used to specifically be tied to salaries, but that's not the way that it's been used. We generally have folks operating as part-time state directors, usually making under $20,000, but a bulk of that funding was actually going to the students running the conferences and the competitions and professional development, so we wanted the bill to reflect that. The second portion of the funding, which is the $500,000, is in performance grants, so all of the CTSOs are eligible to apply for those performance grants after they have $20,000 in private matching funds. The OPI will then score those based on their proposals and metrics. There is one caveat there that no CTSO is able to sort of sweep the deck, shall we say, and get more than 20% of the additional funding, just to keep that fair. So it is not divided equally. The OPI actually distributes that funding, and we do have a formula of equally weighted metrics put into the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative, would you care to close on your bill?
I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So I think you can see that there's a lot of success in this program. We have put in measurable metrics so that we can watch where these dollars are being spent and how they're being spent to make sure that everything is covered. These kids come out of there workforce ready, and we do get a return on our investment because the ones that go through the program go to work and they start paying taxes. And so we feel like that's a great benefit, and it helps with our graduation rates. So I thank you for your time. I know it's really valuable right now, so I would ask for a do concur and pass on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on House Bill 382. Committee members, we're going to take a recess now till about 10 after 11 or 10. Can't read that clock. 10:30. Yeah, so about 5 after 11. We're going to let staff get a break, and we have to run downstairs and do a couple things, and we'll try to do as many of that we have that we heard in the last day or two. Just be prepared. We got to move stuff out, and especially if we're going to amend them, we have to move them out. So we're in recess. Senate Finance and Claims will come back to order. We are going to do executive action on the bills that are on the board behind you.
Mr. Chairman, I move do concur on House Bill 382. This was by Representative Oblander. We just heard it this morning, Act revising the state level, strengthening the career and technical student organizations. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Is that the one we were maybe going to use it? Move a conceptual amendment on.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move conceptual amendment to cut the funds in half for the appropriation. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All righty, everybody clear where we're at? We're on House Bill 382.
It's at page 520.
So page 5, line 20, the conceptual amendment is to take it from half, $500,000 to $250,000 on that line. Discussion on the motion on the amendment. Senator Lynch.
Just a question for the amendment sponsor. I guess, can you help me understand the half? Are you looking to serve half the students, half the schools, or half the funding to each school, or what? Where did the half come from?
We're trying to ease into this program a half at a time. They won't have to raise as much money because there'll be fewer dollars to match. No further discussion. Oh, Senator Ellis.
Just a question for the conceptual amendment sponsor, I think is what Senator Glynn is. Would you, this is just an idea, but would you consider like going to $350,000 just so each, it's seven career and technology student organizations, each one would get the same amount easily, that's it's more divisible. Anyhow, it's just an idea.
Go ahead.
I'll move a substitute motion to go to $350,000 to amend the bill to $350,000 on line 20, page 5. For a discussion.
Question.
Question's been called. Need a roll call vote. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glynn?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvery?
Yes.
Senator Boldman?
Yes.
Senator Bartel?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
Yes.
Senator Morgeau?
Yes.
Senator Lenz?
Nay.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Lynch?
Nay.
Senator Bogner?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Flowers?
No.
Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
Yes.
Senator Pope?
No.
Senator Wellborn?
Nay.
Chairman Esp?
Yes.
14 votes yes, 5 votes no.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 382 as once amended.
For a discussion on the bill. Questions been called. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed no.
Senator Bogner votes aye by proxy.
Motion carries. House Bill 382 will move to second reading.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 403. This was introduced by Representative Beatty, an act revising laws related to teacher and specialist licensure. Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the bills?
Question.
Question's been called. Let's do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glynn?
Yes.
Vice Chair Ellis?
No.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvery?
No.
Senator Boldman?
No.
Senator Bartel?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
No.
Senator Morgeau?
No.
Senator Lenz?
Aye.
Senator Lang?
Yes.
Senator Lynch?
No.
Senator Bogner?
No by proxy.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Flowers?
No.
Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
No.
Senator Pope?
No.
Senator Wellborn?
Yes.
Chairman Esp?
Yes.
9 votes yes, 10 votes no.
Mr. Chairman, I move to reverse the vote table.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 449. This was by Representative Buckley, an act provided for pediatric complex care assistance services. Mr. Chairman.
Everybody have the bill? We brought it down yesterday. It's tan.
Yeah.
This was the one where the young lady came in with her mom, and they were asking for nurse help with nursing.
It was Isabel.
Isabel, wasn't it? Yes.
Isabel.
Yeah.
Any discussion on the bill?
Question.
Question's been called. Roll call vote. We'll try voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Senator McGilvray, any other noes?
Senator Bogner's yes by proxy.
Motion carries 18 to 1. That bill will go to
third.
Mr.
Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 496. This was by Representative Walsh, an act creating health care preceptor tax income tax credit. Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the bill?
Question.
Question's been called. Let's do a roll call vote.
All right. Vice Chair Glim?
No.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvray?
No.
Senator Boldman?
Yes.
Senator Bartel?
No.
Senator Mandeville?
No.
Senator Morgeau?
Yes.
Senator Lenz?
Nay.
Senator Lang?
No.
Senator Lynch?
Yes.
Senator Bogner?
No by proxy.
Senator Cuff?
No.
Senator Flowers?
Yes.
Senator Vance? Or Senator Fuller?
Yes.
Senator Vance?
No.
Senator Pope?
Yes.
Senator Wellborn?
No.
Chairman Esp?
No.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm a no on House Bill 496.
7 votes yes, 12 votes no then.
Donuts tomorrow.
$20.
Mr. Chairman, I move to reverse the voting table.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move do concur on House Bill 828. This was by Representative Buttrey, an act establishing an ambulance provider assessment fee. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, while people are pulling that out, there was a handout that I was asked to hand out to everybody. So Cy helped us with that yesterday, but it just gives everybody a list of all the cities and the hospital and the medical facilities that have signed on to this idea, Mr. Chair.
And it includes everybody that didn't sign on to it. It's one of the problems with the bill, but I thought it had some problems and maybe needed further work, but I'm not sure we have time to do it here. Further discussion?
Lang.
Question. Lang, are you asking a question? Are you?
Just go ahead with the question.
All right. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glim?
No.
Vice Chair Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Solomon?
Yes.
Senator McGilvray?
No.
Senator Boldman?
Yes.
Senator Bartel?
Yes.
Senator Mandeville?
No.
Senator Morgeau?
Yes.
Senator Lenz?
No. Nay.
Senator Lang?
No.
Senator Lynch.
Yes.
Senator Bogner.
No by proxy.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Flowers.
Yes.
Senator Fuller.
No.
Senator Vance.
Yes.
Senator Pope.
Yes.
Senator Wellborn.
Aye.
Chairman Esp.
No.
11 votes yes, 8 votes no.
House Bill 828 has been concurred in finance and claims. It will go to third reading.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 4. This was by Representative Jones. It is an act appropriating money that would usually be appropriated by a budget amendment.
We don't have it up yet.
We maybe have to. I withdraw my motion, Mr. All Chairman. Right. We're waiting on an amendment there.
Yeah, buddy. I can't help
you. That's what we're all about down here.
House Bill 4?
We'd have to back it out of your other bill if we're going to go that high. So we have, do we have one more? Is that it? 220.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 220. This was by Representative Kastmeyer, an act providing for a select committee on energy resource planning and acquisition. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Glimm. Yesterday in Leg Ad, I think we heard another study bill that had another bunch of money in it. I don't know. We're going down the path that the interim committees won't have nothing to do, nothing to study.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Discussion.
I will support this bill. I got to say that this is intended. It takes 6 years, at the very least, to try to wade through the red tape to build a plant. We are running out of energy, and the entire focus is to try to shorten up that process that it takes to get through that endless cycle of red tape. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you want to listen to my raspy voice, I'm going to support this, and I'm not being funny. I'm just saying that I agree with the other senator that I like electricity, and if we don't start to get on ball here, we're not going to need it, or we're not going to have it when we need it. And I will tell you, in the last legislative session, I don't know if you remember, but one of our good friends that's from eastern Montana was here at the session, and Texas got cold, and they switched the power off, and they were out of power for 12 hours. And if you know, it was cold, and we're better than that. And I think this is a way that we can try to hedge this and be able to get our energy issues under control. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I don't mind the study going forward. I just think it should be in an interim committee. I just don't think we should spend extra money on it, and that's where I'm landing. It doesn't mean I don't like electricity.
Not as well as Bartel, apparently.
Question?
Question's been called. We'll do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Glimm.
No.
Vice Chair Ellis.
No.
Senator Solomon.
Yes.
Senator McGilvery.
Yes.
Senator Boldman.
No.
Senator Bartel.
Yes.
Senator Mandeville.
Yes.
Senator Morgeau.
220.
Senator Lenz.
Aye.
Senator Lang.
No.
Senator Lynch.
Yes.
Senator Bogner.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Flowers.
No.
Senator Fuller.
Yes.
Senator Vance.
Yes.
Senator Pope.
Yes.
Senator Wellborn.
Yes.
Chairman Esp.
No.
12 votes yes, 7 votes no.
Motion carries. House Bill 220 will go to third reading. Members of the committee, I think that gets to what we can do maybe this afternoon or this evening, whenever it is, we can deal with House Bill 4. I'm thinking maybe 4:30 we'll meet in this room if Senator McGillivray's done with his meeting, I guess we'll just be on call till he's done, that we can change out the nameplates and the packets. So until then, we're adjourned. Yeah, if you don't want it thrown away, pick your stuff up.